Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast, our weekly jog through the world of television and popular culture, but pretty much television.
It's just television.
No, but you talk. Kay talks sometimes about books. You mm-hmm. don't really, but Kay does. Kay elevates.
Yeah, we talk about films sometimes.
And I'm going to talk about film.
Okay, great. Fine.
So
take it back.
Rewind. It's popular culture, but the meat is mainly the meaty section of the podcast is mainly about television. As usual, I'm joined by the great Kay Rivero.
Hello.
And the immense Steph Seelack.
Wondered what you were going to say then.
Just making it up on the
spot.
Thanks, B. The meat this week is very varied, I think. It's one of our most varied meats. I mean, partly because we are in the summer, as I've mentioned for the last few weeks, the summer of sport, where we've got the World Cup's going on.
It's all everyone's talking about.
It's all anyone's talking about. Wimbledon starts next week.
Wimbledon.
Yeah, then so literally the TV schedules are pretty much 90%
sport heavy.
Very sport heavy. But we've found some gems, I think, this week to review.
I'd say this is prime cut.
Yeah. And in fact, actually, I already know what we're doing next week. And it's pretty good, actually.
Steak.
Ooh.
Oh, steak, as in meat steak.
Yeah.
Like the
I'm giving different qualities
beef.
Of meat.
What's it called? Wagyu or something?
Oh, Wagyu beef. Yeah, that's that very expensive beef.
That's what we're dealing with.
David Beckham keeps Instagramming.
Does he?
Oh, yeah, he loves it. Loves a bit of Wagyu beef.
What is Wagyu beef, though?
What is the difference?
It's just beef culled
from rare...
Cows.
What's a rare cow?
I mean, I'm a vegetarian. So
yeah, me
too. A demi-vegetarian.
Boyd.
Quasi-vegetarian.
So you eat chicken?
Let's deal with this. You eat chicken.
Beef. You're just a person who doesn't eat beef, then.
Yeah. Or ham.
When people think that Steph and I can be sometimes a little bit silly, and then you hear Boyd's definition of a vegetarian,
so
all is well with
what
the
meats don't you eat? Just pork?
I don't eat red meat.
Pork beak. You don't eat red meat?
No.
Do you eat any sausages?
No.
Fine.
So it's something.
That's all you do?
I eat fish and I eat chicken. Even the chicken was... This is very boring. Even the chicken was a late arrival.
When did you start eating chicken?
In the last, like, 10 years. So for the first 30 years more of
chicken
my life,
free.
35
and
years.
And why are you vegetarian? Because you like animals or you just don't like red meat?
Oh, no, I don't care. I mean, I do like animals.
I don't care.
I love animals, but it's more to do with the whole idea of it. And I don't like munching on a bit of cow.
Is it because you love Morrissey?
No, although, again, I was a vegetarian before. I was an actual proper vegetarian
before Morrissey.
I knew of Morrissey.
Not before Morrissey, but
before I knew of Morrissey.
Why did you originally become a vegetarian?
Because I went to Ilford Jewish Primary School and they serve these horrendous things called Viennas, which are made from the innards of cows and they're disgusting.
So
I refused to eat them. The only way I refused to eat them is if my mum sent a note saying I was a vegetarian.
I think I'm going to throw up.
No, but
innards of...
Try not to throw up. Viennas, look them up, they're horrendous.
So weird though, I became vegetarian so I could get out of eating my mum's mints.
What, she had rules?
She used to make...
You had to send a letter from the school to your mum.
Spaghetti bolognese, it was disgusting. Anyway, enough about vegetarianism, carry on Boyd.
As I was saying, this week we've got some varied meat. We have The Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan, aka Kay's best buddy.
Whoop whoop.
Which is coming up on BBC Two next Sunday.
Bong.
We have a new Walter Presents series, which is kind of Channel 4's equivalent of like BBC 4 foreign programmes.
Show You Can Read.
Subtitles. As Steph calls it, Night and Day. And it's a Spanish series.
Nit and Dia.
Correct. And finally, we have, in honour of Steph Seedland, because she loves him so much, her favourite actor / comedian, John Bishop, in conversation with, is back for its fourth series on the W Channel, and she has watched it.
I have watched it. Please do not call him an actor before anything else, okay?
I just did that
to
annoy
you. He is a comedian.
He has acted. He acted in that
Steph,
thing.
Steph, he did act. Yeah. These are facts.
Not well. Not well.
Well, he did. And I, by the way, listeners, I've made sure, I've double-checked, I know you're all worried out there, I've double-checked that Steph has watched the opening episode of this programme. She hasn't skipped forward to episode two for random reasons best known to herself.
But you know what? I did go back and watch episode one of
well
The
done.
Affair.
Good.
And I have to say that you guys described it perfectly.
Oh.
So well done,
thanks,
you.
Thanks, Steph.
Yeah. Mm. It was a very good description.
We passed the test.
I've also now watched episode three.
Oh, and showing off.
Yep.
And you could, is that an early preview? Is that a spoiler alert for your, what have you been watching, reading, listening to?
No, because I absolutely, if I told you anything about episode three of The Affair, it would be completely terrible for everyone involved because it's such an incredible episode.
Wow.
Do not be irresponsible then.
No, I'm not going to.
Huge claims. Of course, I can't watch it because Steph's used my website access to that program and now it's been revoked and I can't watch it.
Is that why?
It's not revoked, it's run out, isn't it? We've got the maximum views.
It has had the maximum views. Oh, well.
What else, Steph, have you been watching?
Right.
Do tell.
Okay, well, how's about something on Netflix for a change?
Go on, then.
Just this once.
I don't know, you've blown my mind.
Okay, Unsolved.
Oh, I think it's even more mind-blowing. It's going to be crime-based.
I've heard all about this.
Crime-based, Unsolved, Biggie and Tupac.
But to be fair to you, this is actually a drama, isn't it?
But the brilliant thing about this, it is a drama, 10-part drama. Mm. The amazing thing is about it is that interspersed in the dramatic scenes is real footage of events. So in the first episode, this is not, it's really well done. I don't think I've seen it done this well. And I know John Dunn is a particular hater of when dramas have like things in them that are the actual footage.
When dramas have things in them? Yeah. Is that what he said?
He said, when I have things in them, I don't like it.
Do you mean when documentaries have dramatized bits?
Yeah, he doesn't
I think that's
like
what
that.
You mean. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that either.
Is that not what I said?
That's the opposite way around.
Yeah, it's the opposite of what you said. But
the opposite of what I said is what John Dunn does.
You are, as we know, ill.
Sorry, can we just, can we have a bit of a disclaimer? I am slightly unwell, so I've got the sniffles, everyone. Yeah, so if I don't make sense, that's why. Not for all the normal reasons.
Yeah, I don't like documentaries that have dramatized bits.
Why?
I think it's cheesy. And you know, in fact, sorry, this is a bit of a big interruption, but I have to quickly say, you know, there was this George Michael show that was on Channel 5 last night as a recording. It was last Thursday. And it's already infamous. I think if you look on Channel 5's catch-up, I urge you, it's literally a dramatisation of George Michael's life. Secret life, including, like, going on Happens to Ethan stuff. And he's played by an actor. And I only glimpsed it briefly because everyone was talking about it on Twitter.
Why?
But that is a classic example of the cheesiness of the documentary
drama
recreation situation.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
I'm not on board with that.
No.
But this is brilliant. Okay,
right,
so
carry
it's
on.
10 parts, dramatisation, and what it's about is the unsolved case of who killed Biggie and who killed Tupac. And as you know, if you've watched if you've listened to the very first episode of the Unmissables podcast, I had already solved this for you.
But we can't repeat it because John got very nervous that lawyers would be involved.
No, listen, all I'm going to say is that Sugar Knight is a naughty man and he's still in prison. But what this examines is whether Sugar Knight was involved in any murderous plots.
Yeah.
But it's the dramatization is the policeman, Josh Duhamel's in it. So it kind of flashes back to the original investigation and then forward to when they reopen the case.
And it's based on the book by the cop who was involved, right?
It is.
Have you watched the whole thing? Isn't it like 10 hours or something?
It's 10 hours. No, right. I've just watched the first two episodes.
That's
but they've
strange.
Got that guy. I know. They've got that guy who played Tupac in All Eyes on Me, who looks exactly like Tupac. It's so...
And he plays Tupac again?
Yeah, he plays Tupac in
All Eyes on Me. He's like Biggie. That'd be brilliant.
He's gained a lot of weight and he's ready for it.
That'd be great stunt casting.
Honestly, it's so good. But
you know the weird thing is well, there's a film along the way about this very same thing. Starring Johnny Depp as the detective. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there is.
How weird is that?
Yeah.
So like, they're, you know...
Is it an anniversary? What's going on? Why are there so many?
Maybe it's because like I don't know. There's like a statute of limitations on some evidence being released or something. I don't know. But I mean, the case was reopened.
Of limitations?
Listen, I can't
speak ill.
Properly. I am unwell.
But I thought you might have genuinely thought it was statute because some people do. You know,
oh
how some
my
people,
god, people.
Sorry,
I thought it was statute
well,
of limitations.
There are people
statute.
That do get that wrong.
Okay, and you chose it to be me. That you
chose it.
You
did. I was checking.
Statute
so you're saying it's good. How many stars would you give it?
Okay. Absolutely brilliant. I would give it 5 stars because I think the way they've interweaved, so especially in the first episode, the way they interweave the dramatization of the club night when it actually happens with the real footage of Biggie getting shot, it's really,
so it's not
really
jarring,
well done.
It's...
No, it's really, really good. And actually, you know how Josh Duhamel is actually a terrible actor? Mm. He's good in this.
He's not a terrible actor.
He is a terrible
actor. He's not great.
Name another good thing that he was in that was good.
But he's not Oscar worthy, is he?
He was good in a film we did, one of his earlier films, directed by the guy who did the first Bourne films, and I can't remember the name of that.
So
you
can't remember
Go,
the name of it.
I think it's called Go. And it was 3 stories intertwined, funnily enough.
Okay,
and he's
so
good
he
in
was
that.
Barely in it.
He's good in that. He's good in lots of things.
Like what else?
All right, that's one.
Okay, Transformers,
just
rubbish.
Obviously the Transformers films are terrible, but it's not his
fault. Fine.
I'd say Marky Mark's a terrible actor.
What?
Don't say that. Well, you wouldn't say that, would you?
No.
But he's been in the Transformers films.
Yeah, but he
blame the films, not the star.
Okay, yeah, but Marky Mark made the Transformer films good again.
Well, he didn't. They were shit.
Did.
Okay. I think we have time. This is a bigger
Kay's
thing.
Kay's intervening.
Okay, right.
Moving on.
BBC. the iPlayer. You've got 18 days as of today, which we're recording on Friday, to watch Suffragettes with Lucy Worsley. And as you know,
this is
I'm
the one
obsessed
that
with
you
her.
You said you were excited to watch.
I'm obsessed with Lucy Worsley. She is the wonderful, brilliant, gorgeous woman who does all of the history things. And she, you might not like this, because she does a lot of dramatisations in her retelling of history. But they're so effective. And she's obviously, she gets dressed up and everything. She's really, really good. So this is the history of how we got the vote. Because, as you all know, it is 100 years since women over 30 who owned a property were able to get a vote this year. Okay? Mm. As you all know.
Yeah. Which would have included you.
Okay. Would have, yeah, we're both property owners.
Barely pushing 28 boys.
Yeah. And 1 hour and 29 minutes of glorious recreation, because it's not just about Pankhurst. It's about a lot of other women who put their lives in danger and lots of terrible things happened to them. It's definitely worth a watch. Okay. And that's on BBC, which is unlike me, as you know.
The whole thing's unlike you.
Yeah, okay.
To be honest. No,
oh, she loves the suffragettes.
Does she?
Yeah.
What do you mean? I'm a huge history buff. I love history.
Have you seen the film Suffragette by Thingy?
That was good.
I love history.
Thingy, what's it?
I was trying to make you watch that thing on Netflix, like about the Roosevelts, remember? And you were like, what are you talking about? Like the 17-hour long thing. Mm. It's brilliant.
Yeah, good.
Okay, and then lastly, because I'm being very restrained this week, I just want to mention that the final episode of the Wonderland Murders, episode 7 of the Wonderland Murders, do you remember me talking about this originally? Right, the Wonderland Murders, John Holmes, who is the most prolific porn actor ever, who's now passed away, he was in possession
of a
tool
very large
that
member.
Helped him, yeah.
He was the guy on who loosely Boogie Nights was based on.
Yes.
Very loosely. Yeah. I mean, the idea of talking Marky Mark, of course. Marky Mark played the lead guy, porn actor famous for his enormous genital area.
Yes, fine. His enormous genital
I don't know
area.
Why we're being so coy about it.
Big penis. I've said it.
I don't know how I feel about that.
Decided to throw that in.
Anyway, episode 7's great because it's a conversation with the two detectives who this podcast, the book that these two detectives wrote the podcast was based on. Right. So The Wonderland Murders is a drugs hit where four people were butchered, one person survived, and John Holmes was let them in to butcher these people. It's a fascinating story, but the two lead detectives on it, so the last episode is them talking, and they were, one of them is also a detective on the OJ case as well. So fascinating. If you love true crime, it's just really, really interesting to hear them talk about this whole thing on the iTunes.
It's a podcast.
Oh, it's a podcast.
Yeah.
Sorry.
As I said at the beginning.
Did you hear?
No, I remembered her, Steph, talking about it previously.
Okay. Yeah. It's really good. It's
I'm
great.
Good at remembering what people say.
It's fascinating. And sadly, John Holmes died of
no longer with us
AIDS-related illness at 42. I think something terrible
really?
Like that. Yeah.
Oh, God.
But it is a fascinating story, and it is unsolved. The mystery of who killed them. Although we do know.
You do.
No, it was Eddie Nash. He did it. Definitely.
Is that? Is he Eddie Nash?
They talk about it in the beginning.
It's a legal
again.
DA.
No,
this is you need to get our lawyers
Everybody
involved.
Knows this. Everybody knows this, and it's from the beginning.
Everybody in your mind?
Okay, allegedly it was this guy called Eddie Nash.
Oh, here we go. It comes out now.
It's a reverse ferret.
Okay, so Sugar Knight and Eddie Nash are two people.
Can we impose a new rule in which you try not to implicate people in crimes if they're still alive?
I mean, we can try and do that. I just don't know how I'm going to stick to it, really. Right. And that's it from me.
Well, it's good.
That was a good list.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rib.
So you got Kay's approval.
Yep.
That's all I seek.
And what about you?
So I have finally caught up on the last episode of The Bridge. So you talked about this last week. John Dan, I'm not going to reveal too much because I know you're very invested in it.
I think in the real world, that's on tonight, isn't it? Is it? Is that
no,
right?
No, it's on the 29th.
Oh, is it next week? Oh, sorry. I'm so ahead of myself.
Yeah, it'll be on this Friday.
Right.
And it is every bit as good as you said.
Thanks.
And I just think the Saga and Henrik final scenes, it's just perfect. It's how you'd want it to... finish and her final and the final scene is really poignant. So John Dan, you've got a lot to look forward to. His face indicates he's excited.
Well, he did a thumbs up.
Yeah.
More than just the face.
Also, now this one's a little bit of a showing off moment because I've got to tell you that I went to
a bong. Is it a bong moment?
It is a bong moment.
Okay.
Okay. I went to the Great British Bake Off tent.
Bong 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 bong.
And I saw some bakers. I can't say a lot about this, by the way.
Don't
because
say the address,
I
you don't want Bake Off fans raiding the tent.
Look, they've got a Bake Off sniper trained on me because you have to sign a lot of forms. Mm. So all I can say is I went there, I spoke to Prue and to Paul and Noel and Sandy, and they were great, and it's going to be great again. That's what
I'll
tell you.
Did Paul Hollywood shake your hand in that way he does?
No, but I did talk to him about that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I can't tell you what he said.
Are you going to be revealing all in Heat magazine?
Yeah, when it's on, we're going to be doing a special. Or the interview will be in there. One thing I can tell you, I did not get any sodding cake.
Not at all?
Not a sniff of, not a crumb, not a bit of icing, nothing. I got delicious lunch, but I was excited.
When I went to...
he's trying to steal my bong.
Years ago.
Don't try and steal my bong.
Back in the day. Yeah. I went when it was still on BBC One. I think I might have gone to the last BBC One series, but I can't remember. Mel and Sue were there, and I did get some cake.
Well,
oh, great.
Listen. Okay. When I went to Bake Off, which was on BBC One, and it was in far-flung, like, Somerset or something, with Mel and Sue, I got not only cake, but also a delicious lunch. So if we're, you know, saying who's won, it's me.
You're a bloody rot.
Yeah. I just don't understand.
John Dad, you went to Bake Off...
Why you needed to do that?
Sorry.
I know, I wasn't even going to do mine.
Or you.
Okay. Yeah, but I was following on from him.
All right, well, I had a delicious lunch, no cake, so obviously I'm the loser in this equation. But anyway, I just thought I'd tell you about that. That's coming up soon, something to be excited about. And this is another teaser, because I was interviewing Ramesh Ranganathan.
Oh, you're such a name-dropper.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Gratuitous.
Oh, Ramesh, how wonderful. I love him.
He is
Kay
ace.
And Rom up in a tree.
He is happily married.
Anyway, so I was interviewing him for the show that we're about to preview, but I had to watch as part of it because he's got a lot coming out this year, like a ridiculous amount. I said,
what are you calling it?
I'm saying he's the Emily Sandé of comedy, because, you know, remember 2012 when Emily Sandé was everywhere? Oh, this is what it's going to be like for Ramesh, but it's absolutely fine because we love him and he's hilarious.
He's not going to be belting out power ballads though, is he?
You don't know. He raps.
He's really good at rapping.
He loves a rap.
He was in the Freestyle UK finals.
And doesn't he have that podcast? Like hip-hop?
Hip-hop, yeah. It's a hip-hop something.
Hip-hop Evolution?
Just put it into the iTunes, you'll find it.
He has a hip-hop podcast.
Ramesh Ranganathan and hip-hop, look it up, you'll find it. But as part of this research I did, I had to watch one of his new shows, which I'm sure we'll be previewing in a few weeks, called Judge Ramesh, where he is basically... as the title would suggest, a judge. No legal qualifications at all. He presides in his own court for like disputes that are going on. Now, your friend Steph, and actually boys, Tom Davis, is
Big Tom Davis!
Yep.
Well, he's not actually one of them, but he is your friend.
Is the bailiff, and Kerry Howard is the clerk. And it is, honestly...
Is it real life people?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically...
Is it Judge Judy?
It's Judge Judy.
Ramesh.
Amazing.
And he just comes in, they come in with these disputes, like one of the ones was someone hoarding their, buying and hoarding, the wife wasn't happy. And he's just there. And like, sometimes he'll just judge according to their voice if he finds them annoying. So it's really funny. Yeah.
And is it legally binding in any way whatsoever? Are there any kind of disputes that will have...
No, but I think we can all agree Ramesh's word's final.
So, yeah, that's true. That is true.
Yeah. And that's it. That's
been very bongy for you
very
today.
It's very bongy, and it's very like teasery.
Very name droppy.
Very name droppy.
But, you know.
Cake free.
We'll allow it.
It's cake free zone.
Okay.
But, you know. Brevity.
Again. Whatever I do, I only did three things. She always does less than me to make
things.
Me look.
The bridge, Bake Off, and Judge Ramesh. That's three things.
Yeah, so, okay.
Yeah, three.
Let's always be factually correct.
Yes.
Now, Boydo, pray tell, what have you been watching?
Well, I'm indebted to Chris Clark on the Twitter, who is Clarky9 on Twitter, for alerting me to the fact that the David Letterman and Jerry Seinfeld interview, which they conducted a while ago, which was a kind of promotional event. And so to promote, you know, in America, they have this thing called the upfronts, where all the big channels kind of have been on their big stars to an audience of advertisers and TV writers and people like that to preview their next season. And so this thing that happens every year in America, it's a huge big thing. Netflix got a lot of their talent to interview each other. Mm. So Netflix signed up Jerry Seinfeld to do all his stand-up specials and his
series,
Comedians in Cars, getting coffee. To interview David Letterman, whose show, as we also know, is on Netflix.
What a great hybrid.
So, and these are, I'm not exaggerating, these are probably my two greatest TV heroes, / comedy heroes in the world ever.
Yeah.
So for me, these are the gods.
No. Not Cumberbatch, like, not Sherlock, not Doctor Who, none of these.
Exactly. These are the gods, my gods of the world.
Yeah, you love them.
I love them.
Boyd.
God.
What's going on? Tell us. Were you disappointed?
Clarkie9 pointed out that, because I was like, I knew this had happened, and I was like, but where's it going to be? Can we watch it? Because it was a promotional event. It wasn't really recorded for TV as such. But what Netflix has done is they've appended it as like a bonus thing to the David Letterman My Next Guest Needs No Introduction series, which is on Netflix now. And if you go to the one, episode 6, which is with Howard Stern
is
which
really
is in
good.
Itself great. Yeah,
it's
brilliant.
It's really good.
Underneath it, and I didn't even notice until Clarkie9 pointed it out, this bit.
Clarkie, well, I think your boy's new best friend.
Hey, who is Clarkie? Is he a TV industry bigwig? How did he find out?
He's just a friendly guy.
He's just a friendly guy, yeah. Who knows?
Now, listen, and why was it attached to episode 6?
Well, it is weird, yeah.
Yeah, because it's such a huge thing. Like, loads of people be interested.
I think it is 45 minutes, so it's not like it's not long enough because, you know, the other ones are kind of 45 minutes with other bits thrown in. I think because it wasn't conceived as an episode in itself, and in fact, it's really them chatting to each other, like interviewing each other.
Yeah.
Jerry asked David Letterman as many questions as Letterman asks Jerry. And Jerry asks him really random things like, what did you have for breakfast this morning? It's very you.
Listen, this is a great question.
Because Jerry's concerns are very like for the daily and the trivial.
Of course.
Yeah.
They're not trivial. These
Whereas
are important things.
Letterman's like, well, you changed the face of television, you know, and yours is a great sitcom. Yeah. So that it's very interesting. He wants to know about his kids. My favourite bit, there's a brilliant bit where Letterman says to Seinfeld, so Letterman's got one son, quite young son, and Jerry's got like 2 or 3 kids now, I think. And Letterman says to Seinfeld, so tell me about your kids. What are they like? What are they like doing? And Jerry goes, you know what? I'm just sick to death of famous people going on about their kids. Kids, kids, kids. My children do this, my children do that. Who cares? Let's be about us. Let me be about us for a change. And it's so brilliant. So it is absolutely everything you want it to
be. Can I just mention something while you're talking about Jerry Seinfeld?
Yes.
Actually, 2 things. So as you know, I also love Jerry Seinfeld. Mm. And then I fell into, because Netflix have now got Two Ferns up. Have you seen the Jerry Seinfeld one? I hadn't seen it. Yeah. I didn't. So I was like, oh, I've watched all these before, but I'm going to watch them again. If you haven't watched Between Two Ferns, it is Zach Galifianakis interviewing people literally Between Two Ferns. He does Obama. I mean, he does everyone. Natalie Portman, Obama, Brad Pitt. Mm. He does everyone. And he does it very, very sporadically. The last one he did was Jerry Seinfeld, and it's absolutely brilliant. But also coming up on Jerry Seinfeld is he's doing a Comedians in Car Get Coffee with Dave Chappelle,
which is
my idea of heaven.
Yeah,
that
7th
is
of
absolutely
July, the whole series.
Your heroes, comedy heroes, coming together.
Well, we share a Jerry Seinfeld love.
Yeah,
but I don't think you love Dave Chappelle in the way that I do.
No, I like Dave. I don't love him.
No,
I like him a lot.
No, 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 not in the same way.
Not in the same way.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that will be. Yeah, that new series of Comedians in Cars is on the 7th of July on the Netflix. Yes.
Oh, I mean that is a dream.
FYI,
for me.
And all 12 episodes drop, I believe.
Oh, do they all at once? Oh,
in Netflix
my
style, because previously that's been on a website, its own website thing. Started out as a kind of like promotional thing, didn't it?
Yeah.
He's just doing Ellen DeGeneres, I think he's on it. Jerry Lewis, who's like 90 something years old.
Oh my God. It's going to be incredible. 7th of July, everyone.
7th of July. I also wanted to mention the Westworld finale. I went to a screening of that. Kate's already laughing.
Yeah, I'm laughing because actually, before you say anything, I did tweet a picture from the Unmissables podcast of a picture of Boyd in a wanted poster, and that was from the event you're going to talk about now.
Yes, they made a wanted poster. Like an old-fashioned Western, you know.
Yes, I saw it.
Most of it. They really didn't brand it as Westworld. So
it did look like you'd done something.
It looks like a thing that I've done myself. But
in your spare time, in your spare room.
So this goes out. Our podcast goes out today on Tuesday. The Westworld finale went out on Sunday on Skylantic, and it's a 90-minute special. And all I wanted to say about it was that it was really interesting to see the creators, Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan, who are a married couple. He's the brother of Christopher Nolan, the legendary director. And he actually wrote...
The person who rescued Batman.
Yeah, exactly. And he co-wrote a lot of the Dark Knight, or if not all the Dark Knight trilogy. They worked together a lot in the old days. Now this is his job, Westworld, so he's a busy man. But it was really interesting, because I've been slightly disappointed with the second season of Westworld. I don't know about you. Have you been kept up with it?
I have to say, it is watched a lot in my house, because Liam watches it a lot, and he hasn't been as into it. Like, the first season he was really into, and he hasn't been as into this one.
I think, for me, the problem, like, in the middle of it, it kind of got very... It was like cross-cutting between these 3 or 4 main characters, and you were like...
Did it get too confusing?
Extending. It was very... It's very confusing. It's going across like at least 2 if not 3 timelines.
No.
And not for you.
She's out. She hates different timelines.
And it cross-cuts between these 4 or 4 main characters, and they're kind of rather repetitively all travelling in the same direction, but you don't quite know why. Why are they? What are they looking? They're all looking for something. You know, she's looking for a daughter. He's looking for the answers to what the hell's going on. So is this other guy. And it was all a bit exhausting.
Have they tried too much, too hard?
But it got they won me back. There was a brilliant episode following an Indian, a Native American character, which was great. It was like a standalone thing, all about him, and it was brilliant. And I have to say, I thought the finale was pretty amazing because it's almost like this 90-minute stunningly lavish film. It's so epic, and there's some incredible sequences in it. There's one slow motion that was quite near the beginning. I mean, as people, I can talk about it without spoiling it now because people will have seen it, hopefully, fans, at the weekend. There's this slow motion thing where these mechanical, robotic bulls kind of start invading to the people, the hosts of the park within where, and it's quite incredible image, and it's really spectacular. And also, more importantly, I think I finally understood kind of what they're all getting at, what the whole point of it is,
right?
Which is that.
Glad you did.
Frankly, have humans actually got any free will? This is the really interesting question. So I'm leaving you with this huge big philosophical... I'm not leaving you, but I'm planting this huge big philosophical
I'm just going to have to mull that over for the next 40 minutes. I don't think I can contribute to this anymore.
Someone asked Jonathan Nolan about it. It's really interesting because apparently scientists, proper scientists who know what they're talking about,
are now thinking
we don't actually have free will. And the way the brain works is you think you're making decisions.
But
like right
not.
Now, my decision to put my hand on this desk like I've just done. But in fact, before that even I actually decided to take the decision, my brain was doing it for me.
Do you know what?
Oh, God.
Joe Rogan has just done a really, really good podcast about that. Talking to a scientist about whether we actually free will is a thing that exists for
us. It's quite mind-blowing.
Yeah, I mean, everything Joe Rogan does is brilliant. So if you look up his podcast, you'll be very happy.
So I liked the Westworld season finale, and I'm really interested in where it's going next. Next, it's going to go out into the world. So the next season, three, is going to be...
They're outside of the park.
Yeah, outside of the park.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And I've still got one more thing to say.
Two more things to say.
Sorry, Kay. I know you want to shut me up. The James Corden, Carpool Karaoke, Paul McCartney is one of the greatest things ever seen.
Oh, everyone's talking about that.
Oh, my God. Have you seen it yet?
No.
So it goes out as we speak tonight on Sky One, but it's all on it's on YouTube.
On his
channel,
yeah.
23 minutes of absolute joy.
So he says it's the best one he's ever done.
It's the best one ever. It's also more than just Carpool Karaoke because they do a gig in a pub in Liverpool, a surprise gig in a small pub in Liverpool.
Can you imagine if you were in that pub?
Right. Oh my God. You do. You see these people and their faces.
They're just going there for a quiet pint.
Yeah.
And then suddenly
they go nuts.
It all kicks off.
And it's so clever because James Corden kind of goes to the barmaid, I'm going to help you behind the bar. And so people see James arrive first and somehow they keep it shielded off, the fact that the band, Paul McCartney's band, is setting up. And they just start playing. It's
phenomenal.
That must
have been incredible.
He goes down Penny Lane, he sings Penny Lane. Then there's also another where he goes back to his house where he lived, where he wrote the first Beatles songs with John Lennon. And he literally goes, we sat there and we wrote, Love Me Do. And it's like, it's pretty incredible.
Wow.
And in the middle of it, James gets really emotional because he talks about how, his grandfather's a musician, his dad's a musician, and how they used to listen to Beatles songs and, try and get him to listen to him together. And it's really moving. It's really,
Doesn't
really
his dad
sweet.
Play the saxophone?
Yeah, his dad played saxophone. He played it a lot on last night's episode of the show.
Oh.
Yeah, with the band.
Oh, that's
a
nice touch.
Yeah. So the whole thing, and I think people, it's interesting on Twitter because people slag off James Corden every single day.
I don't
it's ludicrous.
Know why.
No one because
do you know, it can only be jealousy. It's not that tall
British
poppy syndrome, isn't it?
It's tall poppy syndrome.
He's so fantastic.
Exactly.
It's just like, just be proud of him.
This everyone's suddenly gone, oh, hold on a minute, this is brilliant.
Yeah.
Because he's giving back to the
just
British people.
It's undeniably without and you cannot, even if you're a hater.
I don't understand why anyone would hate James Corden. He's so funny and brilliant. I don't get it.
And when you see and he is the one, he's come up with this thing. He drove it, he wanted to do it right from the start. Of the series, and they've all made it happen, and it's absolutely everything you want it to be. 23 minutes with him.
Bravo!
And one more thing, Sicario 2, the film, is good.
Yeah,
I loved Sicario 1.
I did too.
It's a brilliant film. You do miss Emily Blunt. She's not in it at all.
Okay.
And I really like the fact that Sicario 1 was seen through her eyes. She was this newbie in this world of these macho American CIA, FBI people doing this, kind of trying to deal with drug barons.
Yeah. What's the guy in it? Why can't I remember his name?
Benicio del Toro.
Benicio del Toro, that's it.
So he's back, and Josh Brolin's back, and they're both great. And it's a good film.
Is there a female lead in it?
There is not a female lead.
Oh,
and I think that's a big lack.
Okay.
It feels less focused. Anyway, that's a lot. But I think I've finished
that was a good list.
I think really good.
I thought they were all valid.
Yeah,
they are valid.
They all earned their place at the table, Boyd.
But it's time to move on to
Tweets Before the Meat. Now, We've said last week that people have been on holiday. So we had you had a slither of meat last week. Have people been getting
it
more
was,
in touch?
It was so thin, it was like a bit of salami last week. Yeah. No, prosciutto or something like
that.
Oh,
yeah, you know, prosciutto, yeah. That like very wafer thin ham. Yeah.
It's a bit thicker this week. I'm happy to. Well, what I'd say is there was a little bit of drama in the Twistphere last week. We had a bit of a tumultuous time.
Oh.
Blimey.
Because last Tuesday, we had to, and it makes me a bit sad to say this, we had to sack John Dan.
Oh dear.
Right? We had to sack him. Our hands were tied.
Yeah.
Because he committed the crime of putting the wrong menu up, right?
Now, what a doofus.
We don't do this for the love of, you know, just for the love of it. Well, we do it a bit, actually. Yeah. But, you know, John's one job.
Nice. Ooh, dear.
Lazy.
His one job, he's scrunching his face
is
up.
Just phoning this, it in.
Is making this happen.
Yeah, it's making this happen, recording it, making it not sound shit, and putting the goddamn right menu up. And he put the wrong menu up. Anyway, so someone alerted us to the fact.
Oh, hold on.
Now, wasn't it the wrong episode?
We hadn't put the new episode up yet. Apologia.
I thought you put the wrong menu up.
I think there should be an on-air apology, Kay. Yes. From you to John Dan. I believe you were the person who fired John Dan as well on the Twitter sphere.
Okay, so to clarify,
causing uproar.
Listen, just to clear something up then, it wasn't my fault and it wasn't John Dan's fault. It was on her tiptoe feet, Mike. Mike lured me into full sense of security.
Mike.
Thinking that John Dan had fucked up. He hadn't. I now apologise. So we, collectively, brackets me, fired John Dan on Twitter for his... now we know not error, and it was about 4 or 5 hours that we were on a wieldy rudderless ship. The Almost
I missed
podcast.
This whole thing because I was at a screening or something, and I came back and I suddenly saw this pandemonium in the Unmissables community.
I know.
And I was furious because you'd sat, you know, I mean, what were we going to do?
I started a movement.
Yeah, let me read this out. So bearing in mind, it did look like John Dunn had put up the wrong menu because it was last week's menu. Didn't realise that certain tippy toes was getting involved and causing trouble. Then Steph started a movement, which was basically down with John Dunn, come on, let's break his spirit. At which point...
Unbelievable.
Boyd Hilton got involved.
Mean
and
Girls.
It wasn't me. No, I just fired him. Like a swift getting dismissal.
I wanted everyone to
I didn't want to torture John Dan. I just wanted him out of the equation. And then, Boyd tweeted, in capitals, leave John Dan alone.
And then we all did.
So he was reinstated. So, I mean, John Dan
Go on.
Go on.
What I've just realised is, funny enough, because there was that old one there, I literally still have not, I think it's the first time in history of the Unmissables, I didn't tweet about the podcast this week, because I saw that I was going to. Yeah.
So do you think and that's John Dan's fault?
Is there a new one there? And then I got confused, and then I just forgot to do the whole thing. So now I feel like I've
How
let
How do people
down.
Know it's on if well, you
exactly.
don't tweet
Does
about
it really
it?
Exist?
No, exactly.
If I don't tweet about it,
so
does
who's
it exist?
Who's to blame for this bit, then?
I'm blaming myself.
Not John?
No, not at all. No.
Okay, so he doesn't have to be fired for the second time. I just want to keep up to date with if we're
But I only just realised that as you've told the story.
Down with Boyd.
You can get rid of me, it's fine.
Anyway, so that was going on mainly on Twitter. It was just persecuting John. But the second thing is we did have a question, and it was about Killing Eve?
Yes, Killing
and
Eve.
And when's it back on?
Yes. So you haven't got the name of the Twitter.
Killing Eve.
Yeah, Killing Eve is the new comedy drama, espionage comedy drama from the BBC. It's been commissioned by BBC America, so it's already been on in America, and it's created by Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Oh,
the brilliant Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Amazing.
She was on Corden's chat show, plugging
she?
It.
I mean, she's
but annoyingly, for some reason, the BBC have not started showing it here yet, and I don't think it's going on here for a while. I don't see
what?
Any. Yeah, I don't think. I think they're saving up to certainly.
Why?
Clearly to the end of the World
Can you
Cup
watch it anywhere online or anything like that?
Well,
anywhere?
Nothing
can,
illegally.
No,
Steph.
You know, like sometimes you can access BBC America if you search.
Why
you
are BBC
no,
illegally?
You
yeah.
Okay,
why
fine.
Are BBC
All right,
punching
don't do
us?
That. I don't know why they're punching us. They don't know why they're. But I'm. It is. You know, the reviews of it in America have been absolutely phenomenal.
Really?
She's not in it, by the way. It stars other people. But it's about two women, one of which, off the top of my head, it's about a espionage, a female spy, and her and someone else, an assassin maybe. And
yeah.
And how they
get
We
covered
find.
It in the mag. We did
right,
it in TV
yeah,
news.
So
TV news.
How does this BBC America thing work? Because we pay for
it's
BBC.
It's its own channel. Well, no.
They just have the name.
I think it's funded by BBC Worldwide, which is a kind of separate company now, which makes its own money by selling, you know, DVDs
to all the
and
territories.
Rights. Yeah, so they commission their own stuff, BBC America. including this. This is their big commission, like one or two big things a
so
year.
So we're not paying it out the BBC, of the licence fee?
I don't think so.
Okay, fine. Because otherwise I was going
to
demand...
But it's still weird that BBC isn't showing it yet, because it's a big delay.
We need to get to the bottom
and
of this.
And people really want to see it, yeah.
I've just got to let you know that that tweet was from Laura Jenkins.
Good, you do have to.
And actually, Laura. Laura's the one with the poglet,
oh,
if you remember.
Lovely, yeah. Laura, with yeah. our first poglet.
Our next generation of listener. And then finally, I did say on Twitter that we would be discussing this picture, which...
Oh, Kay is holding aloft a photograph of who I believe is John Malkovich. And he is in a top hat.
Yeah.
And he has got a very nice moustache and beard. And I believe that he is your favourite person, Hercule Poirot.
Oh, God. Wow.
Or however that? You say that.
Hercule Poirot.
Hercule Poirot. It's a cold.
Yeah, Poirot. Yeah. So I said we'd have a little chat about that, because how is everyone feeling about this picture that came out?
I feel absolutely fine about it, Kay, because I'm not psychotic and I don't consider every single new incarnation of Poirot to be some kind of insult to your favourite version played by that... What's his name?
David Suchet. This is a safe space to discuss it.
We all remember Murder on the Orient Express Gates when you were furious with Ken Branagh.
We absolutely cannot get
I'm
into
not
that.
Reviving
no,
that.
I'm not going to get into that.
That's the context. The context is you were furious with that version. You were furious
but the difference with this one is... Okay, so we're talking about the BBC adaptation of the ABC murders.
By Sarah Phelps, the queen of the brilliant Christmas Christie Phelps.
The pervert.
The genius pervert of modern day.
Now, we're calling her that just to give you some context, because when she did Ordeal by Innocence, she was branded a pervert for, you know,
and also she brings stuff out at Christmas.
Yeah. Although, so actually, Ordeal by Innocence went out earlier this year rather than at Christmas, because it was because of the delay. They had to refilm it.
I think it sounds nice to call it Christmas.
I guarantee you this ABC Murders will be on at Christmas. Anyway, I could not be more excited, because she is a genius, as we've said, the pervert genius, Sarah Phelps.
Yeah.
And I love John Malkovich, and I think he's brilliant.
Who doesn't?
He's great in Billions. If you watch any of Billions.
Yeah, Billions is amazing.
He's completely enlivened Billions. He's brilliant in everything.
It needed something.
It did.
It really did.
I agree. And so I cannot be more excited.
I have to say, Kay, when I read this news only yesterday, and the first thought in my mind was, how the F is Ribeiro going to take this? That's honestly what I thought.
I think Phelps felt the same, and the BBC, and Malkovich.
Let me just tell everyone that I'm cautiously excited about this.
Oh.
The concept of her adapting this, the ABC murders.
I'm
not against it, because I really liked Ordeal by Innocence, as you remember. I loved it, even though she had changed the ending, and I'm usually a purist.
Yeah.
But that's because it wasn't a Poirot novel. That's why I think I was quite cavalier with that, right?
Of course,
fine.
Yeah.
So as you could, you know, I'm sure you can understand that I'm a little bit nervous with this, because if she starts messing with Poirot, then I might have
There'll
a different
way. There'll be hell to pay.
What I would say is, and I'm sorry to swear, just don't fuck with Poirot.
Yeah.
So as long as she's respectful.
Why don't you DM her? She's great on. She's brilliant on Twitter, Sarah Phelps, Phelpsy.
Is David Suchet? Is passed on. Has he passed on?
No, he's alive. Okay, on Twitter.
With us. Brilliant.
I think I might have asked this before. But why then
why
is
do you
he...
keep thinking he's dead?
Because I don't understand why other people are doing Poirot.
Well, that's the question I ask myself every day.
They adapted, as far as I'm aware, McKay's the expert.
All of them.
All of the Poirot books on ITV. Across what, 7-8 years or something?
Yeah,
and that was his job doing that. And then when he did other stuff, and now he's doing other stuff. He doesn't want to go back. So now, every now and then, like the film, the Ken Branagh film that Kay loves so much, and this very exciting Phelpsy getting into the world of Poirot is a different thing. Isn't it? It's a completely different thing, new world. And these are much more. Those were Kay's going to get annoyed with me, but in my mind, those were quite great. Some of them great traditional. Very solid, good...
Tea time favourites.
Adaptations.
Tea time favourites.
What Phelps does is something much more, much darker, more challenging,
bolder, daring.
And
I remember
it is going to be interesting to see if the Poirot-loving Agatha Christie fan community, which you are the leader...
it's going to be interesting. All I say is... respect Poirot, right? And that's my last word.
Okay, fine.
But I'm cautiously excited.
This is a very late... thank you for the tweet and what's it called? Tweets and meats or something?
Tweet and greet.
Tweet and greet. Although tweet meat sounds like sweet meat.
Yeah.
Great.
Maybe it could be a new franchise. Let's move on to the meat of the meat. Beginning with the misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan Kay is our very much she our is. Ramesh Ranganathan correspondent.
Yep.
And she's already name dropped. She interviewed him this week for Heat Magazine.
Gone to the front line.
Yep.
She loves him. She hangs out with him.
I mean, once when I interviewed him.
Explain what the fuck.
No, we chased him at the NTAs.
Oh, yeah, he has been in our NTA shoot. He has been in our BAFTA shoot. He's a friend of Heat.
Friend of Heat.
And also, just before I say what the program's about, when I interviewed him, I did tell him about the Unmissables podcast, and I just casually extended the invite to him. Would you want to come on? Like, just, you know, mooted it. He's bang up for it. He wants to come on. He wants to chat to us.
Jimmy's going to take my place or Steph's place. It'll be you and him.
Excuse me. He'll be taking your place. Thanks very much.
Fine. I'm on holiday soon, so it'll be good.
Right. Okay. So.
Yes. Tell us what this is.
Okay. So, as you know, there's a big, like, kind of franchise of comedians doing travelogues these days, often going to glamorous places, sipping on cocktails. But, you know, we've got
Jack Whitehall and his dad.
Dara Brian. Brian.
Yeah.
Who else we had? We had loads.
Michael Palin.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, yes. Classic. Michael Palin. Oh, that's
Richard
Simon Reeves.
Ayoade.
Oh, no, yes. Simon Reeves is actually, that's his only job.
The Trip.
He's not
we've had loads of them. Yes. Anyway, we've had loads of them. He's doing something similar, but instead of going to glamorous places, he's going to some of the most depressing and dangerous places in the world. And the reason why he's doing that is because he wants to see, you know, show everyone them and say, look, actually, should we be going to them? Should we be, like, be, you know, trying to break some of the myths and dispel them and say, these places are actually quite nice. Well, we'll soon see if they are. And he goes to Albania, Ethiopia, and the first episode is set in Haiti, which, as we all know, was described by President Trump as a shithole and suffered an earthquake in 2010. So he heads there and he has a look around. He's got a really nice guide called Jeremy.
Jez is fantastic.
He's a journalist and a really sweet guy who kind of, like, chaperones Ramesh around and protects him, because he does go to places like very dangerous territories where there's rival gangs. He goes to the slums. He goes to places that were, like, really devastated by the earthquake.
Soleil, doesn't he? Goes to the
which is an incredibly dangerous place. Yeah. Which he said he was absolutely shitting about going to, because, look, basically, no matter how much
you've got impoverished places,
shitting about it.
He was shitting about it.
Yeah, because he had, like, security with him. But what can they do if someone pulls a gun on him?
Exactly.
But he does do, you know, nice stuff. Like, he goes to some waterfalls and, like, nice places. And he also takes part in a voodoo ceremony, because he expresses the fact that, like, well, first of all, they have Haitian voodoo there as sort of religion, and he expresses that he has anxiety sometimes, and so he said, you know, maybe voodoo can help me with this. So he takes part in a ceremony and
with some chickens,
which, as a vegan, he doesn't want to be slaughtered.
And he does some kind of rapping as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, he just freestyles with a local musician.
Well, we all know that Kay holds a very big candle for Ramesh.
Can you stop saying candle? It implies that, like, you know, something untoward's going on.
No, nothing untoward.
Is something untoward going on?
I can confirm nothing untoward is going on.
No, I apologise.
I do find it very, very funny. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying she holds a fan candle. Yeah. It's a fan candle.
She's got a fan-sized fandle.
A fandle. Do you, how do you feel about Ramesh Ranganathan going to Haiti for an hour on your TV screen?
I'm deeply in love with Ramesh Ranganathan, as is Kay.
Hold a candle. You're proud to admit you hold a candle.
I've got my candle. I'm, like, holding it up.
She's got a flare.
He is happily married, and he mentions his wife a lot, and that's very good for them both.
And as are you, happily married.
Yeah.
Just married.
To the Amber George.
Just married, please. Yes, I absolutely love this, because in my eyes, Ramesh Ranganathan can do no wrong, because his specific brand of comedy I just find so funny. His just deadpan, I just love him.
Dry.
Yeah, just dry humour. And I also think he's doing something. I kind of thought when this first started, how is he going to make all these impoverished places, how is he going to make this funny without seeming like, I'll just go back to my nice life in Crawley now. How is he going to deal with that? And actually, he does it kind of expertly. And there's at the end of it, the kind of roundup of what, when he's talking about it, because he does measure it against other tourist places and sort of says, well, is this a place you should come? No, maybe you'll go to Portugal, blah, blah, blah. But responsibly, if we're talking about responsible tourism, maybe these places need us to go to them. And he does do that. Like, he goes to the really nice part of Haiti with the beautiful beaches and actually nice swimming pool and everything like that, as well as going to the places with no running water or electricity, which are shocking and upsetting. But at the same time, he manages to kind of, you know, make it seem informative yet humorous. And I think he's a master at doing that. It's brilliant. I loved it. Loved every minute of it.
Okay, did it live up to your Romesh Ranganathan-based expectations?
Yes, it did. I agree with everything Steph said. And I think I like, because it doesn't seem, obviously with travel shows like this, they all, obviously all are contrived in some way, but this doesn't feel like it.
It doesn't feel like it,
and
does it?
It never feels like he's kind of taking the piss out of the locals. He's very respectful about it because, you know, obviously when you're talking about stuff like voodoo, which in the episode with the voodoo, for example, they're doing stuff like they're taking powders of leave me alone powder, adding it with a deodorant and spraying him with it, which to other people, you know, I'm sure they would just be laughing in their faces, or, you know, of the voodoo master.
Yeah.
But he's very respectful and, you know, the humour comes from what's happening rather than him, you know, kind of mean-spiritedly taking the piss out of them. So, yeah.
Oh, that would be awful.
It's kind of but like, no, I just think it would be easy just to take, like, in a very snarky way.
Yes.
But he manages to kind of straddle the kind of eyewitness reportness of it in terms of showing us, like, this is a place that had a horrendous earthquake, and actually is the only thing they've rebuilt, I believe, like, to a better state than it was, is this strange marketplace where they get all that, it's like kind of strange looking marketplace. And that's the only thing. They've got this gorgeous cathedral. Nothing's been rebuilt because they just don't have the infrastructure and they don't have the money coming in. And most people in Haiti are surviving in the poorest parts on less than $1 a day, which is shocking.
Mm. It is incredible. Yeah, he's very honest about it, isn't he? He's honest about the dilemma, which is that, on the one hand, he wants to say everyone should go there to help with their economy and tourism. But on the other hand, he says they're not really ready for it because there isn't anything. You go there and you feel guilty because there's a brilliant bit where it's the transparency of it, isn't there? He's literally standing there going, I'm not sure we should have filmed that, with a bit where he meets the poor kids, living on in poverty.
And he found it upsetting.
Obviously, you'd be inhuman to not be upset by it. But I still think it's even more brilliantly honest.
Yeah.
Because he kind of talks us through the dilemma and says, I'm not even sure if we should have filmed it or we should show it. And then says, I'm not sure we should be here. And then he says, I'm not sure if I should come back as a tourist. It's all, and of course, it is complicated.
That's part of his charm, is that he feels like every man.
Oh,
right?
No, completely.
He's just like.
But right from the start, I thought it was brilliant at the start because you mentioned all the different celebrity travelogue programs. They run through that at the beginning. He's very funny where he stands there going, well, you know, where should we go? I could go to India. No, Joan Lum has been there. Michael Payne has been everywhere. So it's like he even addresses the absolutely true fact that every single celebrity is doing a travelogue program.
Yeah.
Of some
kind. Bravo takes funny niche, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it's a good niche.
But I mean, also with a message.
There have been some similar shows to this. So, for example, there was a great series I really liked on BBC Two where duos of celebrities went on some of the most dangerous roads and journeys that you could go on.
Mm.
David Baddiel did one, and that was quite similar. And there's another show, and I was trying to find out what it was.
What we're saying is this is derivative.
No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is because he's so brilliant, and because they go to these specific three places, which I haven't seen covered in this way, in the celebrity travelogue genre, they're great. And he is absolutely brilliant. I love him. Yeah, it was fantastic. And brilliant. And the way he gets the Jeremy guy, because in all these shows, you know, they've got people who are helping them out, experts in the local area, and it's up to the producers and the researchers, isn't it, to find these people. In this, they make a whole thing of the fact that he becomes his buddy for the duration of the show.
Yeah, and that Jeremy takes the piss out of him.
Yeah, and their relationship
is really
funny.
It's very sweet. And by the end of it, they're calling each other brother, and it's really nice.
And they go diving off that bloody cliff, which
oh my God.
Unbelievable.
But what the point that he makes, which is so amazing, is, okay, so Haiti is an island nestled in the Caribbean, nestled between these other huge tourist islands. And he was saying that basically 5,000 people, tourists, went to Haiti last year, and some ridiculous, like, millions of tourists went to all the other their Caribbean islands. But they're nestled in the same area, and they all have the same potential to be these huge tourist traps where people would love, because they have these beautiful beaches. And I think it's kind of responsible journalism and reporting that actually he's doing as well, which is great.
Oh, without doubt.
He, you know that bit when he jumps off the waterfall? Because it's really dangerous looking, isn't it? Because it's like, it's such a sheer drop, and then it looks like there's rocks everywhere. And he said, basically, the producer said, look, you know, go up there, and if you don't feel comfortable, whatever, just come down, it's fine. And he said he got up there, and basically the way down was more dangerous than jumping, and they knew probably.
Wow.
So they knew that ultimately he'd probably have to, you know, just jump off, see what happens.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to guess that we're all going to love the star rating is going to suitably reflect our love for the misadventures of Romesh Ranganathan. How many stars are you giving it, Kay?
I'll give it 5 stars.
Steph.
5 stars, Ramesh.
It's a 5 from me. The Misadventures of Ramesh Ranganathan starts next Sunday, the 1st of July, on BBC One. No, BBC Two.
Oh, phew. Boy.
Don't go tuning in BBC One expecting to see it because it's not going to be
on. It's not on BBC One.
No,
these
are the basics. There'll be football on BBC One, I think, almost certainly. Next, we go on to another foreign climb. That's my great...
Such a great
DJ-style link. To Walter Presents, which is the strand... It's the overall name for all the foreign stuff that Channel 4 buys.
Who's Walter?
Walter's a real guy who came up with the idea, I think, of having its own, like, pop channel.
Yeah, haven't you seen those adverts that have Walter in it? Walter likes this, and then Walter likes that, and then it does.
I think
Walter
he's German,
presents.
Yeah. I mean,
are you doing a generic German accent?
I was doing a generic
everything?
German accent, but I've seen him talk, and I've even met him. I met him on a radio show. And
you
I'm
met
sure
Walter?
I did meet Walter, yeah. Yeah. Bong. He's a lovely guy. Bong. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Name dropping Walter of Walter Presents fame. This is the new... What they do now a lot, Channel 4, is they'll show you the first episode on the main channel, Channel 4.
Oh, right.
Which is... This is happening next Sunday at 10:15. Oh. Night and Day is this Spanish series. But then the rest of it, immediately afterwards, is on All 4.
The
on
whole,
their, whole
you
thing.
Binge.
Whole thing, binge.
Oh.
So it's like...
That's
we'll give
good.
You, yeah, if we think this is good enough, and if you're excited about what we're about to tell you about our verdict on Night and Day, this Spanish thriller, crime thriller, then you can see the whole thing. Yeah. So, Steph, I feel you are our crime lover.
Fine. I will do it.
This is
even though I had to read
crime.
The whole show.
You had to read the show. You don't like a reading show.
I don't.
A subtitled show. How did you... Oh, no. Well, tell us what this is about first.
Okay. So... Sarah, so this based in Barcelona, okay?
Barcelona.
Such a beautiful horizon, Barcelona. Do you remember that song?
Yeah.
Anyway, Sarah is a forensic pathologist, okay? So she gets the bodies and she tells you how that person has passed. And she is very well respected. Everybody loves her. She's got a really nice husband who's got a horrendous job. He's like heads up a pharmaceutical company and he's a really high powered exec.
Not to contradict you, which I'm going to do.
Oh.
I think he's a nasty bastard.
Oh, right.
But anyway, yeah.
Well, you didn't say he wasn't a nasty bastard.
You said he's a really nice husband.
Did you say that?
No.
Bet
you £1,000,000.
I don't think. I didn't hear her say that.
A lovely husband, but not a nice person.
Oh. Anyway.
I didn't say it, but I did say that.
Immediately to what we just said.
Okay. If that's all you know is I won't be here next week because I'll be living off the £1,000,000.
So anyway, her husband, he's nice to her, but as Kay says, he's not very nice in business.
No. In his multinational pharmaceutical company.
He works for a pharmaceutical company, and he actually works with one of their very good friends, which you'll see when you watch this show. Anyway, so they are in the process of potentially having a child. So they are going through, they meet with a doctor and they're going to go through the IVF process. Mm. And so the thread running through it is, do they want to have children? And is she going to sign the forms to start the whole treatment process? Now, you get the sense from her that she's a little bit of an interesting character. I don't want to give any spoilers away, but a body comes in. At the beginning of the show, you see that there's been a crash. A body comes in. She needs to identify who this person is. And for some reason, she thinks that she knows who this person is.
Via his tattoo. I think we can say that.
Can we?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm not
saying
it wrong.
It's fine.
All right.
Yeah, it's the premise, as I often say.
Okay. Via his tattoo. At the same time, police are investigating... the murders of what seems to be a string of murders of someone killing lovely old ladies in their own homes. Oh, called the granny killer. That's not nice, is it? But anyway.
Also, it doesn't sound so terrifying, does it, in English? The granny killer.
No.
So these kind of two things are going on in tandem. So you're sort of learning about Sarah and her relationship with her husband, and her husband's got some other stuff going on at work. There's much more to Sarah than meets the eye. And at the same time, she's been called, they've got a new recruit in their team and they are investigating this granny killer. Anything more would be to spoil it. And I don't want to be spoiler Steph as I normally am.
I think you've summed it up.
Have I?
Joyously.
Great.
Kay, if you did say that her husband's a lovely guy, that's definitely not true. He is a piece of work, isn't he?
Oh, he is a nasty bastard. I would refer you to your note you've written down, Boyd, in the circle, which says...
tosser.
He's referred to her.
No, the reason I wrote that down is because in the middle of, in the show, because obviously it is Spanish language. He's called referred to as a tosser.
Yeah.
They refer to each other as tossers. And I didn't note down what the Spanish word for tosser was, but maybe you know, Kay, because you are a bit of a Spanish language expert.
Well, you can do. Well, also, I would say this is in Catalan, not Castilian.
Oh,
so
even
actually,
more. Don't you speak both?
No, I speak Castilian, but I can understand this. But there's certain words that are just completely different.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of facts for you.
Yeah.
Catalonia. So, yeah. But he is a nasty bastard. I really liked... I love a foreign drama. And as you know, I'm big in the Spanish foreign drama scene.
You are.
Do you remember? What's that one?
No, You Know Who You Are.
Yeah.
You Know Who You Are.
No, I Know Who You Are.
Someone Knows Who Someone Is. Yeah.
Yep.
Do We Know Who We Are?
God, I've just realised it's been a few weeks since I talked about that.
I know.
It's very remiss.
It's your Sherlock.
Well, this is my new thing, yeah.
It really is.
I really like it because... You've got an intelligent, career-driven woman here who is clearly like very complex. She likes sleeping around. I'm saying it is part of the premise.
Oh.
She does. She likes sleeping around. Listen. She likes sex.
Yeah.
That's all good.
She likes drinking.
She likes drinking. She likes sex. And I really thought she was a very interesting character. That's like a real hook for me. Plus the friendship she has with her colleague who she explains to.
Aturi.
Yeah. She explains what's going on in her family life and the, you know, the dilemma she has about whether she wants a baby or doesn't. And then she explains about her infidelities and stuff. And I really like their little partnership. I think it's really good. And I'm excited to watch the rest of it because it's very intriguing.
It was intriguing. I found the husband a bit much to take.
A bit of an overactor.
And also, I'm getting into detail of the first episode, but it kind of jumps from them having this consultation with their doctor about having the artificial insemination and him, like, the quite emotional thing. And then he goes to the boardroom of this where he meets with the salespeople in this company.
He's
ridiculously horrible.
He's over the top.
It's too much. And I just thought...
But then it's qualified, I think, later on, why he does that kind of actual overacting. It is qualified.
I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming the script. I think you know, the script was like...
More subtlety.
Yeah, it needs to be more... Right, so I'm going to be slightly unfair now. I'm going to start comparing it to the likes of The Bridge, you know, these great... I'm sorry, but in this day and age, it's fair. People want to know, don't they?
So what I'm saying
is, if The Bridge is the Rolls Royce of... crime drama
then we might as well give up. That's what
I'm not saying give up at all. No. What I'm saying is, for me, this is like, you know, on a, I'm trying to think of an example of maybe of a Silent Witness, although Silent Witness actually has got really good in recent years. But if you think of Silent Witness as a solid mainstream, you know, not outstanding but very watchable crime drama, I think this Night and Day is like the Spanish equivalent of that. I don't think it's Spain's The Bridge.
No, or the killing. No.
It's kind of mid-level.
And but it's just, worth watching, I'd say.
Oh, yeah. I enjoyed it. And I probably will carry on watching it as well. But, you know, it doesn't feel like essential, but I did enjoy it. Steph?
I'm going to shock you because I really, really enjoyed it. And I thought I really, really enjoyed it. And the testament to me really enjoying it was I started watching it at 1 a.m. last night.
What?
And considering I had to read it, which you know is not what I like to
do. And you're barely functioning.
And I'm barely functioning. I was gripped. I really liked it. And the ending of this first episode ensures that you are gripped.
Yeah, there's a teaser for the second episode.
It's absolutely brilliant. I loved her. I thought she was a really fascinating character. And you know what I really like about it? Because, you know, I think... You think that these things are going to have layers, but it seems it's got, like... I think even more layers than you think it's going to have. Does that make sense? Like, it could just have one kind of secret thing.
Yeah, oh no.
But yeah.
Densely layered.
It really is. Yeah, I really liked it.
I often say that in a preview.
You do, densely layered.
I did enjoy it. What I was going to say, sorry, but I forgot to finish my point about the guy, the scene with the guy being horrible to his colleagues is, I just felt those certain moments were slightly... unsubtle and over the top, whereas the brilliance of something like The Bridge is how brilliantly modulated and judged every one of those moments is. And it made me appreciate how hard it is actually to keep every single scene in something like this believable and real. And that's tough.
The Bridge is a class act.
What do they usually put these Scandi dramas, what do they usually have them on, like Scandi crime
dramas? BBC4, 9 o'clock.
But this is Channel 4.
Saturday night. But they have loads. You should check out all four. Because there's loads, all the whole Water Presents thing. Honestly, every week there are like two or three new foreign dramas, many of which are crime.
Crime.
Yeah.
Thrillers.
And they often show episode one and then they put it all available. Dicta, do we do Dicta?
No, but I watched Dicta.
Oh, well, season three of that's on its way.
I really like that.
Series three is on its way next week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fine.
There you go. Water Presents, Night and Day. on the Channel 4. Nicht und dir. Sounds German.
Yep, yeah. Everything does with you.
Yeah. Is on Channel 4 Sunday, the 1st of July at 10:15 p.m. and then all on all four, as I said. Well, finally.
That's good.
Did that we give it a star rating?
I'm not
do you want
give it a star rating. Before finally we leave the subject, how many stars are you going to give it? Kay?
I'm giving it 4 stars.
I'm also going to give it 4 stars.
I'm going to give it 3.5.
What? Yeah. Such a stingy
oh,
room.
Oh, for goodness sake, why?
Oh, you're right.
Because it's not the bridge.
Yeah, yeah, but only bridge. Rubbish things.
You can't just say everything's not the bridge and give it 3.5 stars.
That's my honest star rating.
Fine.
Deal
oh,
with
those three
it.
And a half, those 3.5 stars are going to come in handy when you're talking about the next thing.
Oh, what a great bit of Steph.
She's already on it.
Steph has made her feelings clear in this early stage of the 4th series of John Bishop in conversation with on the W Channel, which is UK TV's kind of, you know, big posh channel. Where
is it?
Yeah,
is
they have
posh?
Loads of, yeah, okay. They have all their posh stuff on W. Described by The Times, no less, as the most revelatory chat show on TV.
Oh, for God's sake, someone's been paid to write
don't
that.
Be horrible.
Well, it's not the most revelatory
well,
chat.
Well, what they said, but the on. Point is, the carry point on. Is that this is a show. It's not like a chat show, you know, Graham Norton has 7 guests on, 7 A-listers on, they're all talking about their favourite anecdotes.
This is
a one-to-one, one person for an hour, in-depth, about their life, and the Bish, John Bishop, probes them and brings out all of their kind of, you know, emotional moments. And it's, I think, I mean, I'm biased because I did host Bong.
Hands up, yeah.
I hosted the launch event for this. And I interviewed John Bishop about the Bong. Process he goes through.
Bong.
And he's really interesting. And I think this is, I love this kind of stuff. I love, this is equivalent of, you know, one of those podcasts, of a Marc Maron podcast, which we love. Where,
oh,
you know,
I do love Marc Maron, yeah.
Yeah. Where, and this is the closest you get to the on TV, where he is in depth, and it's a conversation, it's a natural conversation. You know, he's not got loads of prepared questions on a clipboard or anything like that. I like the flow of it, I think he's very engaging. And the first one is with Professor Green, who I also am a big fan of, I think he's great, and he's incredibly honest about everything. I feel I'm reviewing it now already, really. I was
fine,
describing it and
just
reviewing
go,
it at the
just
same
go
time.
For it.
Why not?
I liked how he's very honest about, you know, his what's happened to him when he was stabbed, incredible yep. insights into that. Into his relationship with Millie McIntosh, which went wrong, and they, you know, they ended up getting divorced. Just generally,
the suicide of his dad.
His
documentary filmmaking.
Thank you. Everything. Just not one moment of him dissembling or being a bit, you know, like reluctant to address anything that has been asked of him. And that's quite unusual, I think. I felt every single moment of this conversation was both of them being honest. I thought it was great. Steph, you are the famous Bish doubter.
Hater.
I am going to do a gigantic reverse ferret.
Yay!
Because I actually, not on the acting, he's terrible at that. Let's just to be clear. But this was absolutely brilliant. And what I've decided is the genius of John Bishop, okay, is that he allows the interviewee the space and time to actually say something, which is a really big skill. And I understand that it's because it's the in conversation with, but he kind of just, even just his body language, when he sits back, he is genuinely interested. I have to say, I do give a lot of credit to the fact that Professor Green is wonderful and amazing and a hugely fascinating human being anyway, and has got a lot to say because so many things have happened to him. He's like a multifaceted human being. But I thought John Bishop dealt with him so well. I mean, I don't think just anyone could interview Professor Green and get that much emotion out of him. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. I think everyone needs to watch this, actually. This, even if you don't watch any of it, this particular one is kind of a bit of a lesson in how to interview someone if you want to get the best out of them. And actually, my big issue when we reviewed it before was I did not think that we could call him an in-depth reviewer, and I think and I think with this one he has done exactly that. He's got an in-depth interview from Professor Green.
Wow.
I know.
Yeah. I think this should be like, this audio clip should be like saved and played over and again. Maybe we have to tweet
I do give Professor Green a lot of credit for being incredibly interesting, though. I'm just saying.
Yeah, that is true. I mean, he is a fascinating subject.
Yeah.
But he sits back and lets him say things that I don't listen. That's the key. He's a great listener.
Which is very important.
Very important, as we all know.
Listen.
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 Do you know what? Last time we talked about him, one of the things that was raised is that he is no Piers Morgan, right? He doesn't ask the probing killer questions. But I think
he doesn't get that. Can I just make one point before you
remember
say that?
Listen,
it is about that.
Space
right,
to talk.
My main issue was that Piers Morgan, because I just want to clear this up. Piers Morgan digs deep and he gets headlines. That was my main issue, because he got a headline out of Kim Cattrall. Now, what I would say is, before I even watched this, the headline that came out of it was him talking about Millie McIntosh, which to me is what qualifies someone as being an in-depth interviewer.
What?
I'm just saying. Okay. I'm just saying.
Listen,
now it's
now my turn to talk. Right, stop. Basically, that is what you did say about Piers Morgan, and that was your opinion that John Bishop wasn't. But my point is that actually, even though he doesn't, in inverted commas, ask the killer deep probing questions that Piers Morgan is, you know, supposedly does and get those headlines, actually, you got the same kind of big reveal, you know, revelatory answers, honesty from Professor Green just by making a warm, relaxed environment and asking less probing questions, but still getting the same kind of
results. But that's
results.
Down to Professor Green's life being interesting. And he did, and this interview has got a lot of headlines already. So that has
that's
made
down to,
headlines.
Yeah, but because John Bishop asked him in a way, like, do you know
I'm
what
okay.
I'm trying
what
listen,
case, yeah,
wait,
I
can
agree.
I just say, right?
Yes.
So let's all fucking listen. if Piers Morgan was doing this interview, right? So Professor Green, he himself brought up the Millie McIntosh divorce and he like started talking about it. Now, if this was Piers Morgan, would go in for the kill. He would want all the acrimony. Mm. He would want all the details.
Yeah.
And I don't think, like with John Bishop, actually, he kind of skirted around it and didn't actually go there, but said, you know, actually his interesting point was, he's like, I don't really put you in the same world as her. And just through saying that, he got Professor Green to talk about the fact that Millie McIntosh actually, you know, she surrounds herself with people who are actually incredibly fake, and he went on to talk about that. And so,
yeah,
just
so
by not asking the obvious questions, the tabloidy questions, he was able to extract that.
I think actually the skill is not him not saying anything, like not saying anything at all, and letting Professor Green say that. I think Piers Morgan's impatient interviewing, and I agree with you, he's an impatient interviewer. I think he would have probably got the same out of him, but not in such a nice way. So I do agree with you.
Well, we'll never know, but I agree with Kate, because I think the point is that Piers Morgan would have gone in going in 1997, the way
yes.
the year it was.
It's a different style.
You divorced Millie
McIntosh. It's
just
a different style.
Blah, 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 blah. But what I'm saying is,
You're saying it's unnecessary.
No, I'm not even...
Let him say it.
I think the results yielded from a more conversational, less confrontational, yeah. less tabloidy, I'm using that word, I'm throwing it in, style, is you get better results, you get more honesty. If you're looking for honesty, you're always going to go, obviously, I don't even think Piers Morgan's aggressive. Piers Morgan is looking for the headlines and looking for the getting the crying,
yeah.
you know. That format of that show is very specifically, you know, it's very formatted, literally, isn't
yes,
it? Yes, you know?
To get those headlines,
yeah.
absolutely.
And I've watched episodes. Sometimes it's great, and I'm not, by the way, I think the thing that Piers Morgan is best at in his whole life is interviewing people. I think he's pretty good at it.
He's been a tabloid editor for so many years.
He's the most annoying
man
in the world, but he is pretty good.
Oh, he's horrendous.
His interview with the president, Trump, was the worst thing ever. And I think, I guarantee you, John Bishop would have got more out of Donald Trump than him. But I think... This shows is that the conversational style, making it a safe place, safe
That's
space.
It. Yeah, I agree. I
yields
agree.
More honesty in terms of this kind of thing. And I don't think so. Specifically, in answer to Kay's point, I don't think Piers Morgan would have got as much out about that specific topic as we got in this show, because I think he would have been more on the defensive.
Even about the dad's suicide, I don't think he would. Because
no, right. I think other. Keep going on about the Piers Morgan. That format is just not real. This is real. Better results.
I think
probably, for example, I'm going to throw in other people I've seen on it. Brendan Cole is on it. And it, honestly, we won't you see it. It's quite incredible, the stuff he gets from him. About,
oh, really?
Yeah, the goings on in Strictly and all that stuff. Yeah. And I think if he would go on Piers Morgan in the Battling of the Eyelid, I still think these results are going to be better.
I don't know whether he would. I think actually the feel is that at the end of the interview, and this happens with the Professor Green one, you get the sense that those two people will speak again and be friends. And I think that's what you get from John Bishop. And I think when people were interviewed by Piers Morgan, they couldn't give a F or Jeff if they ever see Piers Morgan again. But actually, he makes a connection with people. And that's why I'm doing a complete reverse ferret on him. I totally am.
Yeah.
He does seem to be able to make a bond with anyone that he's interviewing.
The best thing
and
he does.
And I am very impressed by that.
I think, like, as all of us, we interview for a living. I think the best thing you can ever do is to, like, create a warm environment and just listen and allow them to breathe. And that's what he does. And I think that's why he's a good interviewer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. In years of, you know, I mean, no way am I comparing myself to him. But when, you know, we have quite structured ways of interviewing people, I always think conversation is the best way. And that, you know, it's just the results it yields from him are absolutely clear. And I'm not going to make the comparison again, but I still think they're the best results pretty much you can get in this format.
Listen, Bish, comedy, great. Interviewing, great. Acting, no.
Right. What was that show we even saw him in? I can't remember what it was
exactly, because it was not memorable.
It was Helen McCrory. It was the Helen McCrory thing. She was brilliant. It hasn't been recommissioned.
Fine.
Okay.
Hi, I'm giving this particular episode and Bish's interviewing technique 5 stars.
I'm going to give it 4.7, 4.5 stars.
4.5 stars for me.
Yeah. Steph? Oh, from you, 4.5 as well. Sorry, I thought you were repeating what I said.
I do.
We've been talking
sometimes.
So long, now we're just talking nonsense.
John Bishop, in conversation with Ellipsis, it starts on the W Channel next Thursday, the 5th of July at 10 p.m.
10 p.m. 10 p.m. Why?
I mean,
sorry, that's
I've never heard you question the time slot.
Yeah, but it's a 9 p.m. show.
Oh, I think on the kind of, you know, the non-terrestrial channels, they want it's better for them to go slightly later because everyone's watching the big 9 o'clock show.
Fair dues.
Finally, it's that time.
It's question time.
Very much in honour of John Bishop in conversation with the greatest chat show in the history of TV. My question to you is, who is the best chat show guest you've seen on TV being interviewed on a chat show? Or it could be, if you really want, like, who's your ideal chat show guest?
Okay.
But my ideal one. Go on, Kay.
Okay, one that I always enjoy watching. And I don't have any interest in her per se, usually, but whenever she's on Graham Norton, Miriam Margolyes is exceptional.
Yes.
Because you just, like, have no clue what she's going to say. She is so eccentric and brilliant and fascinating that she always makes a very entertaining guest. So I can watch her over and over again.
Yeah.
Have you seen her on it?
Oh, God, yeah. She's brilliant. Yeah. No, she's legendary. She was on with, wasn't it Will I Am? I think might have been the first.
Yeah, and because he's kind of like, you can't often understand what he's going on about. Oh, and then you throw her into the mix, you get yourself a party.
Steph.
Do you know what I have watched many, many times? And it's actually going back to something I was saying earlier. I think President Obama on Between Two Ferns, that is one of the greatest interviews ever. It's just it's a short interview, but actually also when he does Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, that is also a brilliant interview. So I'm going to say President Obama. And also when he's on Jimmy Fallon, The Late Show. So yeah, Obama.
I mean, yeah, you've gone pretty big there, haven't you?
Yeah, he always gives. I mean,
gone big or
go big or go home. I'm not going home. No, I've gone big.
I'm not retracting Miriam though.
Don't retract.
No.
I would have gone for. I already mentioned Jerry Seinfeld earlier in the whole Letterman thing, and I think Jerry Seinfeld is the greatest. Like, I would, if I miss any of Jerry Seinfeld's appearances on TV chat shows, I'm furious with myself. So he's kind of the answer. But I also really, really like David Walliams on TV chat shows. I think he gives brilliant value. And I also really like David Baddiel. I'm just listing people I like now. But on chat shows, they're brilliant. But particularly them on Desert Island Discs recently. David Baddiel on Desert Island Discs recently was fantastic. Yeah.
I'm going to have to listen to that.
There you go. And on that note, it is time to say goodbye. It's a goodbye from me.
It's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Bye.